From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios on the campus of UW-La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today for another arts show. We like to check in with some of our local arts organizations. It's just impossible to hit all of them on any given show, but we try to vary it up and find different perspectives on what people are doing artistically in our community. And we have four excellent organizations represented by three different guests today. So let me introduce our panel as we do a bit of an artistic season preview. First of all, Kay Schrader is here, and Kay is the marketing and engagement manager for the Dubuque Museum of Art. It was that introduction that had been made to me first, and the reason she's on the show. But she's also involved in a theatrical organization called Fly By Night Productions, and so we're going to talk about both of those. Kay, welcome to Newsmakers.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Jace Sullivan is the executive artistic director of the La Crosse Community Theater. Jace, welcome to Newsmakers.
Thank you. And I'm also co-executive director of the Weber Center for the Performing Arts. So we have an extra organization to throw in there
perfect.
Today.
Perfect. Wonderful. And Jeremy Van Meter is the communications manager and also an actor celebrating 10 years with the Commonweal Theater. Jeremy, thank you very much for being here today.
You're welcome, Ezra. My pleasure.
I want to give everybody a chance just briefly to hit the high points about their season and maybe not go show by show, but just in general, just talk about the difference between this year and last year. We get to have a real season this year. Let's start with Kay. What are you doing starting with the Dubuque Museum of Art?
Right now, we have four fantastic exhibitions happening. We're in Dubuque, Iowa at 701 Locust Street in downtown Dubuque, Iowa. And so the three that we have is we've got a Duma Biennial that is going to go through October 31st. And what this is a juried art exhibition that happens every 2 years, and it honors and recognizes artistic talent in our region. And what's interesting is that the juror judged these folks on work that they created during the COVID pandemic of 2020. And you see in this exhibition a lot of how people worked out those COVID issues. But it's really neat. We have a lot of different artists that are represented there. Another thing that we have going on is we also have a mural located on our KDTH building, which is called an I Am a Man mural. And it is taken from a photograph that was taken in April of 68 during a march in Memphis, Tennessee, when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated. And it's literally this gentleman dressed up, and he says, and he's holding a sign saying, I'm a man. So it kind of gives you that legacy of how we've been struggling with race relations for a very long time. I'd like to just round that out with, we have also in the building, Emotionscapes, paintings by Joyce Polance. She's a Chicago-based painter that she has got these kind of emotional, expressive, deeply felt dark emotions through visual forms of landscapes and cityscapes. Which is really interesting. And then the last thing that I'd like to share with you is we also have an exhibition of Arthur Geisert and his current book that he's published called How the Big Bad Wolf Got His Comeuppance. And it's a new variation of the Big Bad Wolf story. And he is one of the artists that we have a large collection of. And he does original etchings. And then he colors them in, and then they make these children's books. And so we're just really privileged to have those there. So that's our exhibitions right now happening at the Dubuque Museum of Art through the end of the year. Again, we're located at 701 Locust Street in Dubuque, Iowa. And you can check us out online at dbqart.org. Or, we've got virtual offerings, but then we also would love to have you in person.
Sounds good. And you're affiliated with another organization called Fly By Night Productions, and I'm going to circle back to that in a little bit. Let's hear from Jeremy and Jace as well. Jace, talk about the La Crosse Community Theater. A very not really much of a season last year. There was a production that was offered outdoors in a parking lot and done. I think making lemonade out of lemons in that circumstance due to COVID. But what's it like getting this really your first full season as the executive artistic director?
Sure. Well, here at LCT, it's been an interesting year with COVID. We did do the All in the Timing, we call it the parking lot plays in our history now. And we also did a streaming broadcast of Miracle on 34th Street, the radio play. And that was also broadcast live over the radio. So we were able to reach people that normally we weren't reaching, which was really cool. We also stayed connected through social media with our patrons. But we really took this past year to dive deep into our business, what we're offering and how we're reaching people and kind of, you know, what are we here for, sort of existential, you know, our place in the community. And we revamped everything. So we did a big audience survey with our audience. And what we found out from it was that there are a lot of things that we do well that the audience loves and identified with that LCT is known for. And there's also some things that we could do better or do at all, things that we haven't been doing. So we've really broadened our programming to reach all of the Cooley region, not just this one segment we were kind of hitting in the past that, you know, I lovingly call them our blue hairs. And they, you know, love a very certain type of theater. And we've kind of been missing the mark with the rest of the region. So we now offer three separate series within our season. We have two spaces here, the Licky Theater, which is a 450-seat proscenium theater, and we have a veteran studio Black Box Theater, which is a 100-seat intimate setting. So first we have our Broadway series, which happens in the Licky Theaters, and it's just like, you know, the title says. This is where you're going to see spectacle, big shows on the big stage, big musicals, lots of laughs, searing drama. You know, an example is we're doing The Sound of Music. So a big type of show. On the other end of the spectrum, we're doing Avenue Q, which is a big show, but a totally different audience probably would like that show. Then we have our Black Box series, which is just like the title says, it's an intimate experience that you would expect from a Black Box type theater. And we're doing a series called Women's Voices. So all of the shows are starring all female casts, directed by women, written by women. And a example of a show in that series is Lizzie the Musical. So it's a rock musical about the life of Lizzie Borden. So it's that off-Broadway type of experience that you wouldn't get at a Broadway show. So we're trying to reach different areas in that respect. And then finally, we have a children's series, our Theater for Young Audiences series. We are bringing in, for the first time ever, touring productions. These are professional tours from organizations like TheaterWorks USA, Virginia Rep, Griffin Theater, and we have professional actors coming in, putting on a show for the kids on a Saturday or Sunday matinee, which is something we've never done before. So we're really trying to reach all of the region as opposed to one certain segment that LCT probably was known for in the past. So we've gotten really great feedback so far. We just started started rehearsals last night for Blythe Spirit, the first show coming up in our season, and we're off to the races.
That sounds good, and you're also the co-executive director of the Weber Center for the Performing Arts, and so we'll circle back because I know the Weber Center has a whole lot going on outside of just the offerings of LCT. So we'll come back to that in just a moment. Jeremy Van Meter from Commonweal Theater, I know that you guys have a season coming up. I know that you're still offering things online as well as in person. What does this season look like for you at Commonweal?
So we are right in the middle of our 2021 season. We started in April, and we tailored this season as far as cast size, not knowing what we were going to be able to welcome in as far as an audience. So we started the season with I Love to Eat, which is a one-man show. Then we moved to Dancing Lessons, which is a two-person show. Currently, we're running The Complete Works of William Shakespeare, A Bridge, which is a three-person show. And then a week from Saturday, we open a play called Come Back, which is a four-person show. And then we'll do a Christmas Carol this holiday. But it's really been, I think as any live theater maker will say, it's really been a learning process for all of us. You know, learning what your what your audience is expecting, you know, what they're willing and comfortable to do. But I'll tell you, we've gone through so many changes in the last year and a half. And, you know, we're just changing. You know, we've gone back to requiring masks again over the last couple of weeks, whereas we had moved away from that earlier in the summer and in the late spring. But it's going well. You know, it's uplifting to have audiences back in the building. The people that have come back, they're just you can just see it on their faces. There's a hunger and a real joy at being back at the theater.
I was able to attend I Love to Eat pretty early on in its run. It was, I think, in April or early May. And it was the audience that was there seemed genuinely appreciative of the opportunity to actually be out in public again. And it was a really, I don't remember the capacity that was available for those early shows, but it seemed like just a few people in the auditorium there. But it was so nice to be able to be in public and see people like that again. Is that I know, Kay, you're working in a museum setting there in Dubuque, Iowa. In theater, sell fewer tickets, fill fewer of the seats. How do you worry about things? How do you handle things like capacity, masking requirements, those kinds of safety aspects working in the museum setting, which is completely different?
We are very lucky. We put together a COVID task force very early on when the pandemic broke, because we are privileged to have board members that are knowledgeable. Like we actually... Bob Wethel is the director of nursing at one of the local hospitals here, Mercy One. And then we have a retired military individual with Bob Felderman. And so it's the best case scenario where you have people serving on your board that have real life experience so they can bring it to the table. And so I was referring to that COVID task force, and basically they would meet back in the day. We met like on every Friday. But they kind of identified what protocols should be. Right now, where we're at is with the majority of the people in our area, they've been vaccinated. And so we have basically said, you know, us as the staff, we're going to wear a mask to protect you. But it is up to you if you come in to the facility, and we would like you to wear a mask, but it's not required. But that has changed over a series of things. Like when it was during the, you know, before the vaccinations were available, we did require masks, and we have hand sanitizer stations and protocols and increased cleanliness, cleaning protocols and things like that. So it was nice to have this task force to go to with questions, because there was things where we actually had, where we'd have people go through galleries, like in one, like you would go through and you'd walk through, you wouldn't one direction. I don't know if I'm explaining that properly, but like you would go in one gallery and come out the other end, but you wouldn't be able to like travel all around there. So we just tried to control the environment and just, you know, keep people safe. And there were times when we were actually closed because it was in the heat of it all. But, we're hanging in there, and we do hope that, you know, we don't get this flare up, but we are prepared for whatever happens. And it does definitely affect how you operate your business.
That's Kay Schrader from the Dubuque Museum of Art, also with Fly By Night Productions, which we will talk about in a moment. Jace Sullivan is with us, the Executive Artistic Director of the La Crosse Community Theater, and he's also with the Weber Center for Performing Arts, and we'll hear about their season in coming moments in our conversation. Jeremy Van Meter is with the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota. Well represented today, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, and we're talking about the arts here on Newsmakers. If you'd like to review part of this conversation or catch a previous episode, they're all available on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. If you want to pass a note our way, I'd love to hear from you. Our email is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. We continue just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. We're visiting with Jeremy Van Meter from Commonweal Theater, Kay Schrader from Dubuque Museum of Art and Fly By Night Productions, and Jace Sullivan from La Crosse Community Theater and the Weber Center for the Performing Arts. Circling back to Jace for a moment, putting on that Weber Center hat for a little while, the community theater is obviously one of the more prominent tenants there at the Weber Center, and that's where all of your or most of your productions are. But there is plenty else on tap, plenty of other things on tap at the Weber Center. What's going on with the official Weber Center for the Performing Arts season?
As you know, the Weber Center is a collaborative venture between La Crosse Community Theater and Viterbo University. So it is the home of LCT. So most of the programming here is put on or presented by La Crosse Community Theater. However, it's also an offsite productions site for Viterbo University. So you can also find their theater department's productions being produced here at the Weber Center. And then we also have events that are presented by the Weber Center itself that don't necessarily fall into the LCT or Viterbo bucket. And we have a concert series that goes on here. It's starting up in September 17th. We have a Steely Dan tribute band called Steely Dane. And those are the kind of events it's a cool time. Whoever thought of that, I hope they trademarked it so no one else can get that name. But and then we have September 24th, an event called Full House, which is a 90s cover band that does, Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and all those kind of things. In October, we have Steve Leslie, who is a tribute artist for James Taylor. So lots of different fun kind of concerts to take in at the Weber Center. You know, come downtown, have a drink at one of the bars that are open, have a walk around on the riverside, and then come see a fun show at the Weber Center. So we have lots of stuff going on in that direction as well.
Kay, we haven't talked to you yet about Fly By Night Productions. Tell me about it.
Sure thing. We are in our 39th season, and I like to tell people that we're the little avant-garde theater, and we're always the ones that do the shows that you haven't heard of. Somebody coined the phrase a while ago about we're the thinking man's theater. So we're that. And so what we've got is traditionally a 3-show season starting in September. Actually, September 17th, we open our 39th season, and we're going to be doing Waiting for Godot by Dave Hansen.
Wait. Waiting for Godot.
Yeah. And okay. So everybody probably has heard of the famous Waiting for Godot, where there is no ending, and it's just a very classic that everybody's heard of. What this is Waiting for Godot by Dave Hansen. It's two individuals that play the understudies of these characters in Waiting for Godot, and they're perpetually waiting in their dressing room to take the stage of Beckett's play. Is tonight their night, tomorrow or when? There's no need to know this Beckett's play to enjoy the Hansen. It's got physical humor, wisecracking riffs and musings on why they continually wait, and it'll just keep you laughing. And it really fits that demographic that we were looking for. We wanted to return to in-person theater because Previously, all last season, we did virtual options, which I can speak to later. But for this one, it's a two-person cast with like a third. And it just, you know, we can do this and keep, and then we're also offering in our space like a 50% capacity. So it's, we're kind of trying to work the system so that we can actually be in person and offer theater to our patrons. And so we're going to see how that goes. And then in January, we have A Piece of My Heart by Shirley Laureau, which is a true drama of women who served in the Vietnam War. And actually we're partnering with the Dubuque Museum of Art, who is presenting, opening in November, an exhibition of AP photography called Vietnam, The Real War, along with some other things. So that'll be really an interesting show. And then in the summer, we are going to be doing, we actually had this on the docket last season before the pandemic, but then we had to table it because we went to virtual, is 10 Chimneys by Jeffrey Hatcher. And it's where comedy, where life and theater collide. It's kind of this soap opera comedy with a Noel Coward touch. 10 Chimneys is this place where these famous Broadway legends of Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontaine, they would always retreat there, and it's in Wisconsin and it's their summer estate. But while they were there, like other actors and family and hanger-oners would come and they do like pre-rehearsals of like, and this one kind of centers around them doing a pre-rehearsal for a Chekhov play. But it's a feel-good thing for me personally. And I think you guys who do theater as well can kind of know this. It's a play about theater folk. It's funny, it's poignant, and it's revealing look at these like private lives that never really leave the stage. I don't know if you know people like that, where you're always kind of like on and performing. And actually 10 Chimneys is still, they have tours of this, and it's in, is it Genesee Depot, Wisconsin, and you can actually tour it. So it's really a lot of fun. Those three plays are a lot of fun, and it's really nice because previously we hadn't been doing in-persons last year. We did a virtual selection of things where we did a stage reading of Taming of the Shrew, where we did all the male characters, we put females in them, and we discussed why, how that related and how it didn't relate. And then we did a Christmas story revolving around some dogs. And then in just recently, we did a book club, how it related to some Shakespeare plays, to how it relates to like social justice things, like example, like a Revenge Society and Romeo and Juliet and just different things like that. And that was very interesting. So it's how many different ways can you approach theater when you can't do it in person? And I found that it was very fruitful, and it was a way to stay connected to our patrons.
So it's interesting to hear you talk about sort of comparing some of those modern issues that we're dealing with some of the theater that you're using. I know, Jace, you talked earlier about the different kinds of audiences and what they each expect theater to do, and you're evaluating that with LCT and figuring out how your seasons need to go forward versus how they've appeared in the past. Jeremy, in your line of work as well, as an actor, as someone who's been involved with Commonweal for so long, anybody could jump in on this question, but let's start with you. I'm thinking about all those different audiences that each expect something different from the theater. Some people don't want to think about anything or be pressured with anything, or they don't want new ideas, and they just want to go get away. And some people like really want to be challenged and moved in a different way than other audiences expect. How do you program for those different aspects of theater audience? Both aspects are valuable to the people that do theater. They're all valued members of the audience. How do you make sure that everybody is coming away with what they need?
We try our hardest.
Yes.
sometimes we fail and sometimes we succeed. But I think for us, what it boils down to at the Commonweal is we're just trying to choose stories that instantly someone can connect to the humanity of the story. So we're just trying to pick stories that we're passionate about. I mean, one of the things that's very important to us as a company is we have to do plays that someone in the company is passionate about. And that's whether you're the director of the show or you're one of the actors on stage. If you don't have that passion behind the project, that's not going to come across to the audience. And we do have these people that, you know, they'll, it kind of sticks in our craw a little bit, but you can't, you know, you can't please everyone. So I think what in, at the end of the day, what's important to us is, have we told the story well, and have we done the playwright and the play the service, and then we just sort of let people deal with however they're gonna to deal with it.
So as an actor, you're on the stage with an audience again. Last year it was a little bit different. How is this year different than last year? Did you the offerings that were offered digitally last year, did you stage them as you normally would have and simply offer a sort of a camera view to the audience, or did you approach the actual production of things differently last year?
We did a very different approach last year. We set up, we did two virtual productions that were filmed. Those were both one person shows. And those were shot more Hollywood film style. There was, you know, stop and start, move the camera, do the scene again. We set up like three or four different camera angles. This season we're doing we're still offering virtual offerings, filmed productions, but we're doing it with a live audience. So what you're seeing when you're watching one of our virtual plays, you're seeing the play in front of a live audience from three different angles. So it matches the quality that we had last year, but there's that little different element because you're getting the audience feedback as well.
I don't know. I watched some things that were offered to digital audiences, concerts and whatever last year. It didn't do the same thing for me because I didn't realize, I mean, sometimes when you go to a show, you're like, I wish that lady in front of me had shut up, or I wish the guy next to me had sit down or something like that. But you don't realize how much that changes the atmosphere. Jeremy?
Yeah, it is not the same. And both of the actors that the guys that did their shows last year, that they both came away with that statement that it's satisfying, but it's nowhere near the same energy and excitement level as an actor that you get from feeding off that energy of the live audience.
Jeremy Van Meter is with Commonweal Theater. Jace, talking about the community theater again, I guess I know you said that you've kind of looked at audience data and kind of revamped how you approach the season's offerings for the different audiences who come. But for those people who are unsure of some of the newer offerings or unsure if they want to experience theater in this way that they really hadn't thought of, if they're used to those more traditional kinds of theatrical shows, how can you kind of, what can you do to kind of bring them along into that new experience a little bit?
First, I'd say we're really lucky here because we have two very distinct theaters to operate in. So we have a proscenium theater, which is a large space, and we have an intimate black box. So those lend to very different types of experiences, regardless of the content of the production. And first of all, we try to steer people, you know, to the right type of experience. Some people like to be more voyeuristic when they're experience in theater, and probably the bigger theater, the proscenium experience is best for them if they like to be a voyeur when they're a theater goer. And if they want to feel like they're actually in the production, they're sitting, you know, their feet away from the cast members and they're kind of at eye level with them, then the black box experience really lends to that. So that's our starting point with programming and thinking about the shows we do for our audiences. And then we can, you know, tailor that to the different kinds of content that people expect. And there's definitely very traditional, theater goers that are only interested in shows like The Sound of Music. But we also have a show in our black box called Night Mother that is a drama that they might really be interested in as well. So we actually have 6-pack and 12-pack passes. And if you're not If all the shows in our Broadway series or Black Box series or Theater for You series are not for you, you can pick and choose different productions out of the different seasons and curate your own season. And how we help our audience with that is every show we have rated, just like a movie. So, you know, there's from G all the way to R ratings for our shows. And that helps our audience see, you know, kind of like what kind of content they're going to come across. And we also, you know, have descriptions of all the shows so they can kind of see what the actual show's about, so they can get an idea if that's something that's their cup of tea. And really our job is to get the right people in the right space. You know, we are the largest nonprofit performing arts organization in the Cooley region. So we have to serve a very broad audience, from children all the way through senior years. And we just like for our audience to keep that in mind, that we're here for the entire community. We don't have the luxury of kind of being a niche organization. We have to really appeal to a very wide base. And, you know, we will do everything possible to make sure that no one will get into the wrong show, get offended by hearing a word they don't want to hear, or see something they don't want to see. So we really, our staff really tries to make sure we're helping the audience choose their own adventure with the different types of productions we're offering here.
So I it's cruel of me to ask you to pick favorites, so that's why I'm going to do it. Maybe not favorites is not the right term, but say somebody is looking for a theatrical challenge, something to really move them in a way they haven't been moved before. Is there something on the agenda that you're particularly proud of in that respect?
I would definitely say The Mountaintop. It's a drama by Katori Hall. And this is actually going to be the first production about Black people that we've ever done at LCT in our history since 1963. It has a whole Black cast. It is about the last night of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's a two-character show with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and a maid at the hotel, the Lorraine Hotel that he stayed in the night before he was assassinated. And it happens right around his holiday as well. So we're really excited to bring something to the region to learn more about his life. A lot of us don't know a lot about him, even though we have a holiday that celebrates him. A lot of us don't know about his life. So we're excited to bring his life and his legacy to the stage and to bring that level of diversity that's never happened here before at LCT. On the musical side, I would say Next to Normal, which is a rock musical. It's about a family that's dealing with a mother who's been suffering from bipolar disorder. We're actually partnering with Gunderson and Mayo. We're doing some talkbacks. And I think after the last year, everyone can agree that you know, mental health has been a real challenge going through this pandemic. So we're hoping that presenting that show will shed a real light on what the struggle of mental illness can be like in a family setting. So, you know, we do have the opposite end of things. You know, we have The Sound of Music, we have Blythe Spirit, we have very family-friendly shows like The Stinky Cheese Man and Pete the Cat for kids. So we've got something for everyone. And if you have any questions about any of the shows, if you need help with deciding what your six pack is, you can always call our box office, and our staff is well-trained and ready to help you pick the season that's right for you.
Perfect. That's Jay Sullivan with the La Crosse Community Theater. I'm going to give everybody an opportunity to give contact information as we start our next segment off. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the arts today and talking with a few of our region is just rich with different artistic opportunities, and you can't fit it all into one show, but we've managed to get three people representing five different organizations to the table today, and I'm appreciative of our guests, Jace Sullivan from the La Crosse Community Theater and Weber Center for the Performing Arts, Kay Schrader from Fly By Night Productions and the Dubuque Museum of Art, and Jeremy Van Meter from Commonweal Theater. Our program will continue in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall, joined today by several representatives from local arts organizations. From in Dubuque, Iowa, we have Kay Schrader, who's with the Dubuque Museum of Art and a theatrical company called Fly By Night Productions. From Lanesboro, Minnesota, we have Jeremy Van Meter with the Commonweal Theater. And from right here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, we have Jay Sullivan with the La Crosse Community Theater and the Weber Center for the Performing Arts. I'm grateful for all of you joining us today. Let's do the you've heard all about the seasons. We'll definitely talk some more about this year and how it's going and what people can expect. But let's get contact information to you so you know where to go if you're interested. Starting with Kay, let's talk about the Dubuque Museum of Art first. How can people get in touch?
Check us out on the web. That is the best way to do it. dbqart.org. And check us out. We have a lot of wonderful information about our current exhibitions and upcoming exhibitions. And we are located in Dubuque, Iowa at 701 Locust Street in beautiful downtown Dubuque, Iowa.
Sounds great. And what about Fly By Night Productions?
Sure thing. Fly By Night Production is also located in Dubuque, Iowa. And you can visit us online as well at flybynightdubuque.com. And our opening season starts on September 17th. Fly By Night Productions.
Sounds great. Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota. Great place to go up, get a nice bike ride in, grab a nice dinner, and then head over to the Commonweal. And how can people find information, Jeremy?
All of our information is on our website, and that is www.commonwealtheater.org, and that is theater re.org.
And wheel, W-E-A-L.
W-E-A-L, yep.
Okay, so all kinds of fun spelling, and if you don't get it, if you Google it and spell it wrong, it'll still come up right anyway.
It'll still pop up, yep.
There we go.
The right way to spell theater, too.
Well, it is the right way to spell theater, but it's kind of, you know, it depends on who you talk to. Google doesn't know it's the right way to spell theater, let's put it that way. Jay Sullivan with the La Crosse Community Theater, how do you spell theater?
Well, I was taught... that theater with an R-E is the art form of theater, and the theater with an E-R is a movie theater that you would go to. So so I have never worked in the movie theater business. I don't know if that's correct, but I know in our business, the performing arts theater is spelled with an R-E, and that's perfect. Our website is lacrossetheaterwithanre.org. You can also find us at webercenterarts.org. And we're at 428 Front Street South here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, right downtown. And, you know, if you're going to go for a bike ride in Lanesville, come down and have a walk at the Riverside Park here in La Crosse. Have a nice dinner and come see a show at the Weber Center.
That sounds great. That sounds great. I want to talk to you, to Kay, about the Duma Biennial, because you were talking about how many of the entries there are reflecting over COVID, and yet, like it's the Duma Biennial. It happens every 2 years, and it's not necessarily that you planned it to be about COVID, but it's just the artists are reacting to what's going on around them. Talk about what you're seeing as part of that exhibition, and how those artists are incorporating what's been going on over the last year and a half or 2 years.
I will always say that you need to see it in order to understand it, but there's more than you can always check it out on dbqart.org. or in person at the museum. But to speak to that of how it's across the board, I think on the arts, everybody's been impacted in some way by the pandemic. And so you just see a lot of people are, you know, reflective of changes that happened in their life and what they see. It's a very reflective kind of exhibition, and everybody's different. That's the other part, is that there are so many different mediums where, you know, one person might do something that is a painting or photography, or then you have, on the other hand, you have like a mixed media where it's very interesting about how people process an experience and then they create something from it. And so it definitely was not what we expected, the biennial, what people would focus on for biennial, but it's, again, how could you not go through something and then have to... a reaction to it. It's like, you know, you're always going to have something happens to you, and then of course there's the equal and opposite reaction.
So when you when you're looking at artists processing that, are you looking at more of like their emotional process about it or whatever reflected on the canvas or on their medium, or is it more like, you know, still life of hand sanitizer?
No, I would say it's mostly, you know, that reflection of your emotional processing of an experience. I think it's, you know, it's hard because you don't, like, everything's kind of being packaged that way. They're like, well, we did our season because it was a pandemic, and I made my art because I was, you know, in isolation or I was quarantining. But it just, never before, or probably hopefully never since then, will something impact us as greatly as this. So I think it's very interesting because we're all individuals, and you can come to this biennial and you can see a series of different artists and how they interpreted that experience. And I just come out and see it.
So not really able to describe it, just kind of needs to be seen to be believed.
It's got such a variety of work that I can tell you that it's not just 2D. It's not just, I guess the simple answer would be yes. I think you would have to come and check it out for yourself, but it's a wonderful exhibition that is a snapshot of what artists were going through and what they were working on while we were in this middle of a pandemic. Normally a biennial is so diverse. You know, you have maybe a person that was leather working and making shoes, or you have this person making jewelry, and it's, you know, it might reflect of them traveling across Europe, but so many, this was such a huge experience for everybody across the board, regardless if you're a jeweler or a photographer, it's all impacted you that way.
So you were really kind of surprised to see that many of the, that high percentage of the artists really focus on this as an inspirational aspect of their art, almost.
I need to clarify, everybody makes their own art, but it's still carried, you couldn't escape the pandemic. And so it's interesting about how everybody has the type of mediums that they work in, but you, when you group it all together, it just was like, oh, this is still a commentary on the pandemic.
Jace, it's easy to see how somebody in a visual medium who's turning a product around on a pretty immediate basis, you know, you'd see things reflected on something as recent as the COVID-19 pandemic. In the theater, it often takes a while for that stuff to process. Are you already hearing of things or seeing things that are you know, as far as playwrights or actors involved in one person shows or whatever, reflecting on this pandemic season at all, or how long do you expect it would take for something to make it in the pipeline that we might see in terms of in a theatrical setting?
Well, I'm already seeing across the industry in theaters that are producing new work. Not even just New York, but, you know, in other markets, a lot of work being centered around the pandemic. You know, I'm from Richmond, Virginia, and I used to be the artistic director of a theater called the Firehouse Theater there. And I'm still follow what they do and connected to that organization. And I see they just did an event called Zombie Play, and it deals with the pandemic. And I'm seeing shows in New York that are opening about the pandemic off Broadway. So I think it's going to be a ripple effect, you know, getting to places that don't produce a lot of new work like LCT. But a lot of our season was kind of crafted as not a response to the pandemic, but exploring topics that we might not have shown a light on previously. Like mental illness. We have two shows, Night Mother and Next to Normal, that really explore mental illness. A lot of our shows are about family, which we've all spent a lot of time with our families the past year and a half, which is a really good thing, and also can you know, kind of be frustrating sometimes, and we need to get out. So you know, a lot of what we're doing here and how we're doing it is definitely in response to the pandemic. We just did, we had our summer camps here for 6 weeks. We had kids from 5 to 18, you know, hundreds of kids came through participating in our summer camps. We did masks, you know, we did all of the sanitizing and all those good things and kept everyone safe. We did two shows this summer. One was at Riverside Park at the Band Shell. We did a Midsummer Night's Dream with the teens. And we did that. That was our first show back. We did that outdoors because we thought it would be the safest way with COVID. And then we did Frozen Junior indoors. We actually, you know, had a great summer with that. However, it was really weird being in masks and rehearsing, you know, and that's just where we are right now. So we've just, as far as our policies in response to the pandemic, you know, our staff is all vaccinated. We're requiring vaccinations for the staff. We had a breakthrough infection on our staff with a fully vaccinated staff. So we're wearing masks in the office, and to stay safe. And we are requiring vaccination, proof of vaccination for everyone who auditions for our shows or for anyone who is wanting to work on one of our shows. We're wearing masks in the rehearsal process. We're not wearing masks on the stage. We did install a $30,000 new HVAC system that's supposed to help mitigate viruses that we're really excited about. And we're also requiring at this point for our audiences to be masked as well. We did a couple weeks ago during Frozen Junior, and we will be doing that with Blythe Spirit. The industry trend right now across the country is actually to require proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test within 48 hours. So we haven't gone to that level yet. However, October is still a ways away. So we'll see where things are there. We've got a little time to kind of see where things are. But our main focus here is with the pandemic, not only with what we're presenting and bringing the community back together in public, in a shared, you know, in the shared experience of theater, but it's also to keep the community safe. The last thing we want to do is to have someone get sick because they came to enjoy a show. So we're hoping to keep everyone safe and be able to enjoy theater in person.
Jeremy, you were talking earlier about this being sort of the middle of your season. So you've really, and it's the middle of your season, and a lot has quickly and suddenly developed about COVID-19 and its spread and the Delta variant. And you've been up and down in terms of what public regulations are versus public expectations and all these kinds of things. You're working with a smaller cast and crew than I think Jace is at the La Crosse Community Theater. Nevertheless, how are you handling within your company these safety concerns?
We joke that you make a decision on a Tuesday, and on a Thursday, you're changing that decision based on things that come down the pipeline from the government. But it's, you know, we have things in place. You know, we had a really successful reopening plan that we put into place in April. It was sometimes a nightmare scenario to get people in the building. But I think that, like I said earlier, we've really learned the lessons of, okay, if this happens, we do this. And then if this happens, we'll do this. So like Jace, we have decided to, you know, to require masks again. It's extremely satisfying that our audience across the board is not having a problem with that. They're used to it. They don't enjoy it, of course. Nobody likes to tell someone you have to do something. But it's, I think it just gets back to what I said. It's just people just have such a desire to get back at what they're used to do, used to doing. And, you know, for so many people in our area, it's the Commonweal is one of those anchor organizations, that people just miss doing it. So they're really open to jumping through those hoops. And they know that those hoops will change from day to day, week to week. But it's good for us to know that we know what we're doing. We know how to do it. And it's easy to implement those things when we have to pivot pretty quickly.
Well, it's been a very interesting conversation today about different arts organizations, how they're handling the pandemic, how they're looking forward to this new season, which in spite of in spite of added precautions and everything, is still exciting to be able to have an actual season. And so that's wonderful. Kay Schrader from the Dubuque Museum of Art and Fly By Night Productions was here with us and had to duck out a moment ago. But I thank her for being here. Jeremy Van Meter is with the Commonweal Theater. Jeremy, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ezra.
And Jace Sullivan is with the La Crosse Community Theater and the Weber Center for the Performing Arts. Jace, thanks a lot.
Ezra, thank you so much, and I hope to see you at the Weber Center for one of our productions soon.
Certainly. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. There are a couple of opportunities to hear our show every week. We originate Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. Then we repeat Friday evening at 7 o'clock on NPR News and Music 88.9. Of course, you can always find us online at wpr.org/newsmakers or drop us a line at newsmakers@wpr.org. My producer is Dawn Jewell, whom I thank very much. Please join us again next week for another Newsmakers, only on Wisconsin Public Radio.